So as I said, we are continuing in this series, looking at some of the main features of the Old Testament as we go through. And so the title for today is Unfaithful Kings and Faithful Prophets. And hopefully you can see plenty of that in the passage that I've just read, where Ahab is the unfaithful king following the Baals and the Asherahs and all this kind of stuff. And Elijah, in this case, is the sole faithful prophet. And actually, to understand where Israel has got to in this point in their story, we need to go back a bit in time. We need to sort of take ourselves back first to the glory days of King David and King Solomon, these kings who were really following the Lord. But we need to realize that after them, things went downhill very suddenly, very rapidly. Because after Solomon came King Rehoboam. That's the time when the kingdom of Israel and Judah split apart, with Jeroboam taking 10 of the tribes of Israel off in one direction and Rehoboam being left with just the tribe of Judah and Benjamin. But Jeroboam was a very different character. So the first of the kings of just Israel on its own, separate from Judah. So in 1 Kings 12, a few chapters before where we're looking at today, we read of Jeroboam. The king made two golden calves. Remember golden calves from before? He said to the people, "Is it too much for you? It is too much for you to go up to Jerusalem. So here are your gods, Israel, who brought you up out of Egypt. One he set up at Bethel and the other at Dan. And this thing became a sin. The people came to worship the one at Bethel and went as far as Dan to worship the other. Jeroboam built shrines on high places and appointed priests from all sorts of people, even though they were not Levites. Can you believe it?" So what Jeroboam is doing is he is ignoring the way God has asked to be worshipped, and he's setting up an alternative way of worshipping, which God has not spoken about at all, and he is leading the people away from worshipping the Lord. And so he is confronted. He is confronted by a prophet called Ahijah. So in 1 Kings 14, we read of this prophet Ahijah. He says to the king, "I raised you up from among the people and appointed you ruler over my people Israel. I tore the kingdom away from the house of David and gave it to you. But you've not been like my servant David, who kept my commands and followed me with all his heart, doing only what was right in my eyes. You've done more evil than all who lived before you. You have made for yourself other gods, idols made of wood and metal. You have aroused my anger and turned your back on me." And so he set the pattern for where the kings will go, right? So we have Jeroboam, who has taken half of Israel, half of the kingdom away and made them worship other gods. And then we read of his son, who is called Nadab in 1 Kings 15. He did evil in the eyes of the Lord, following the ways of his father, committing the same sin his father had caused Israel to commit. The pattern is going on, right? Heading off in all of the wrong direction. We're getting near to the passage that we read today. We move on into 1 Kings 16, a couple of chapters earlier, because there's a new king. The new king is called Baasha. He really was a basher because he stages a coup and he kills Nadab. Then the word of the Lord came to Jehu, son of Hanani, concerning this king, Baasha. The word is this. The prophet says, "I lifted you up from the dust and appointed you ruler over my people Israel. But you followed the ways of Jeroboam and caused my people Israel to sin and to arouse my anger by their sins." So even though there's a coup and we have a new king who is not from that original royal line, still they are heading in this desperately wrong direction. Because then Baasha's son Elah becomes king. But an official called Zimri stages another coup. Zimri came in, struck him down and killed him. And then he succeeded him as king. And this new king now, Zimri, as soon as he begins to reign and was seated on the throne, he killed off Baasha's whole family. He did not spare a single male, whether relative or friend. Why is this crazy stuff going on? Because, it says, of all the sins Baasha and his son Elah had committed, and had caused Israel to commit, so that they aroused the anger of the Lord, the God of Israel, by their worthless idols. So as we go on through, this coup-making king called Zimri actually only lasts 7 days. That the people see the coup and they don't like it, so they appoint a new one. They appoint Omri, the army commander, to be their king. Well, what happens to Zimri? When Zimri saw that the city was taken, he went into the citadel of the royal palace and set the palace on fire around him. And so he died because of the sins he had committed, doing evil in the eyes of the Lord and following the ways of Jeroboam and committing the same sin Jeroboam had caused Israel to commit. So even the king who stages the coup to reform things actually turns out to be the king who is just as bad as where they've been heading off all this time. And so they're left with a new king, Omri. Is Omri any better? Predictions? Of course, Omri is not any better. This is what the Bible concludes about him. Omri did evil in the eyes of the Lord, sinned more than all those who went before him. He followed completely the ways of Jeroboam, we've heard of him before, son of Nebat, committing the same sin Jeroboam had caused Israel to commit, so that they aroused the anger of the Lord, the God of Israel, by their worthless idols. Okay, there's a pattern emerging here. And we're left sort of at this stage asking ourselves the question. We've looked at all these kings of Israel. Could it get any worse? Predictions? Enter Ahab, the object of today's passage. Ahab, son of Omri, became king of Israel, and he reigned in Samaria over Israel for 22 years. Ahab, son of Omri, did more evil in the eyes of the Lord than any of those before him. He not only considered it trivial to commit the sins of Jeroboam, son of Nebat, but he also married Jezebel, daughter of Ethbaal, king of the Sidonians, and began to serve Baal and worship him. He set up an altar for Baal in the temple of Baal that he built in Samaria. Ahab also made Asherah pole and did more to arouse the anger of the Lord, the God of Israel, than did all the kings of Israel before him. Hopefully, as we get to the object of today's passage, you are spotting the common theme. Not only they sinned, but they sinned by worshipping other gods. Not only that, but causing other people, the rest of the people of Israel, to worship these other gods. And as they worship other gods, you will probably have noticed through some little incidents in those passages that their ethics absolutely go to pot as well. Right? Their worship is in the wrong direction, and because their worship is going in the wrong direction, the kind of things they do, their ethics, their values, go in the wrong direction too. Now, we could get very comfortable at this stage, couldn't we? Saying, that was back then, look at us, here we are all in church now, everything's fine. And in a sense, that's true. But if you think about our wider society, we just can't get comfortable here at all. Because the pattern is, they worship other gods. As a result, God is very displeased with them. Their ethics go to pot. They are condemned by God for what they're doing. But look around us. Look around us at what's really going on in our society. People are worshipping their crystals or their Reiki or their tarot or their yoga, various forms of Buddhism, fortune telling, Ouija, you name it. You name it, people will try to find any rubbish to worship to try and avoid worshipping God. We know that that's going on around us in society. And the idols are not always so obvious. Sometimes our idols that we go to, money, power, advancement, we idolize entertainment and fame and youth and good looks. We even manage to make family sometimes into an idol. It's a much more subtle one. But remember, anything that comes before God is idolatry. And we see a lot of that in our culture, where we are elevating our family even ahead of our God, which is a dangerous place to be. But so many other things that are more obvious idols that we have. It's crazy, really. Why do people do this? Why do we put so many other things ahead of God? And really the only answer I can come up with is that We do it because, or maybe we don't do it, but in our society we do it. Because worshipping the living God is a demanding thing. Trusting Jesus, and therefore following the ethics of Jesus, actually means not putting ourselves first. It means putting other people first. It means not accumulating to ourselves, but giving, as Jesus tells us, even in difficult circumstances, to turn the other cheek. It's a hard and demanding ethic that Jesus has. All the modern idols appear to demand nothing of you, except obviously your money. They're quite happy taking your money off you. But all those idols, they demand very little of you except your money. And in a sense, that is easy. Buy your way out of the spiritual mess that we kind of know that we're in seems like an easy route, doesn't it? So people are happy to head off after those kind of idols because it seems like an easier route. I say they appear to demand nothing because, of course, actually in the big picture, when you open yourself to this stuff, you are opening yourself to evil. And when you open yourself to evil, evil will gladly, slowly, surely eat you alive. So we spot that theme in what's going on in ancient Israel, in the Old Testament with all of their kings. Things are getting very bad. But did you spot the other theme from my roundup? You see, the other theme from my roundup is that the prophet Ahijah, he speaks to Jeroboam. Jehu, son of Hanani, he speaks to Baasha. And in today's passage, Elijah confronts King Ahab. Constantly, there is a voice calling the leaders back to the demanding, selfless, humble worship of God. Sometimes they're ignored. Sometimes they're brushed aside, like Ahijah and Jehu. But sometimes things are just so dramatic that they cannot be ignored, like Elijah. So I suppose my point for today, as we are thinking about kings and the prophets that spoke to them in the Old Testament, is that whatever is going on in our society around us, whatever the idols, whatever the evil, the prophetic voice remains squarely at the heart of God's mission in the world. It was true then, and we can see that it's true now as well. But the prophetic voice is you and I. It's the job of the church. Prophets aren't predicting the future. They're interpreting the times in the light of Christ. And they're pointing towards the power and purpose of Jesus. You see, once the people have seen what happened at Mount Carmel, we had the story there of what happened on the mountain. Once they have seen it, they can't unsee it. When people today see the power of God at work in their lives or in the lives of others, equally, they can't unsee it. Sure, they can ignore what they know to be true, as Ahab and Jezebel will go on to do, and as many today also seem to do. But the logical response is what we see at the very end of today's passage, where the people respond. They saw it. They fell prostrate. They cried, "The Lord is God. The Lord is God." So the job of the church today is to prophetically call people from their idols to the power of Jesus to transform their lives. But of course, that's part of the demanding worship of God, because we have to model it. We have to be following his ways, praying for his power. You know, at its simplest, it means answered prayers. It means deep conviction. It means selfless lives that are always pointing towards Jesus, who is in the background to everything that we do. We might be ignored. We might be rejected. But they might see and say, "The Lord, he is God." You see, in the Old Testament, by and large, the prophets get ignored, even though they are the voice of God speaking to all these kings. They are generally ignored, and it does lead to tragedy. And as we continue thinking about what goes on in the Old Testament, Andy will be picking up on that next week, I presume, when we think about the tragedy that came upon the people of Israel. But today, because of Jesus, because we live in New Testament times, there can be a much more hopeful outlook. So let's be praying for better things in Stockport today as we, the church, prophetically call people from the modern day idols to worship the living God.